This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Raslan, today we have a return once again of BFM's very own Uma Pagan, Amike Pagan.
Hello, Cam.
Hello. And we have back on the show for only the second time, educator, theatre director, card-carrying full-time member of the America Land Peoples.
That's right.
Ray Buono.
Good to be here, Cam.
Oh, it's good to have you back. And Ray, not only are you American, but you've lived in Southeast Asia and in Malaysia for like forever now, haven't you?
I came to Singapore in 1987.
Uh-huh.
And
you stayed ever
I
since.
Never went home.
Yeah, okay. Now that we've got Ray here, and Ray and I, we're always in contact on the net arguing U.S. politics. And so we're going to do a supercalifragilistic Trump-tastic show where Donald Trump is going to be turning up quite a bit, I think, actually, as we try to understand what the hell's going on out there. And so the three topics will be, topic number one is bullies. Topic number two is reality TV in American politics. And finally, topic number three is Trump. Where did he come from? And so with topic number one, bullies, Donald Trump is a bully. I think that's pretty obvious. As his campaign has progressed, I keep hearing these noises made by him that remind me that once upon a time, I was bullied at school. And sadly, one of the reactions that I took upon this happening to me was I became a bit of a bully myself. And I'm deeply ashamed of that moment. But the things that he says, I haven't heard since I was, 17, 16 years old. And it makes me wonder, can a bully be defeated?
Well, in this case, yes. Come a Tuesday in November, he might very well be defeated.
But he might very well not be. And a lot of people love him. I mean, they actually love him.
I think the real question is not whether he's going to be defeated or not. I think he is going to be defeated, and I think that's pretty clear by now. I think the real question is, why are so many people behind him?
Yes.
And what will happen to them after he's defeated?
But hang on. For now, though, let's just concentrate on the bullying aspect, okay. Shall we? Your horses there, right?
And of course, with Trump, it's not just verbal bullying, right? I mean, throughout the campaign, we've seen physical bullying as well. Yes. His campaign staffers have been used, have been seen physically abusing journalists, and actually even his rhetoric. There's one speech where Trump's like, I'd like to see him. I'll punch him in his face, to cheers from thousands of people.
That's right. And also, I mean, the classic ones where Marco Rubio, he called Little Marco.
That's right.
And because, Marco Rubio is a bit shorter and also he's young. So in a way, it's kind of like, true, he is Little Marco. How can you deny that? And then but Marco Rubio would have to come forward and say, I'm not little.
I think you're missing one connotation of the word little.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has to do more with his endowment.
Oh, yeah.
The size.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And that's why the whole news cycle was obsessed with the size of Trump's fingers. Yeah. Right? Everything started on that. It's amazing. We're in 2016, a presidential election, and so many days and weeks of the news cycle got obsessed with Trump's state of endowment.
Well, look, there's nothing to worry about there, he told us. So, nothing to see here.
My hands are fine.
But can I just point out one last thing, which was when he went to Mexico here recently.
That's right.
When he turned up in Mexico, having already said for ages that Mexicans are rapists, etc., when he was standing in Mexico with the president, he was quiet and he was well-behaved. And I'm wondering if that's a trait of the bully, that when they actually come into contact with the thing that they've been attacking or a force that is perhaps greater than themselves, that they become quiet and afraid?
Well, that speaks a little bit to the internet generation, doesn't it? That we're all incredibly vocal, even bullying on social media and all of these platforms. But of course, when it comes to being face-to-face and having a conversation with an individual, everyone, not cowers, but is suddenly so much more polite.
Yeah.
It feels like, Trump has, like you said, all of the tendencies of a bully. What does a bully do? When the bully is surrounded by his own people who keep cheering him on, his chest becomes even more and more inflated and he keeps going.
Mm.
But of course, if he's finally face down, as we've seen in numerous movies, with big jocks bullying geeks, when they're finally face down and suddenly the tide and the people and the crowd turn against them, they become tiny and small.
Yeah, but is that actually true?
Well, I mean, don't forget that the very next day he made a speech in which he was back on the bullying, rampaging, denigrating of foreigners, and in fact worse than ever.
In fact, he said during that
speech. In which he lied as well.
Of course.
But also during that speech, he said, America is like the bully that keeps getting beaten up by the little guy. And he said it like that was a bad thing.
Like that was the bad thing,
yeah.
Right?
He said it like, you know, that's the plot line to Karate Kid.
I think he's taking away the wrong messages from film.
Yeah, so he must stop watching movies 10 minutes before the end. So there's still a happy ending for him. Help me out here. If you're in the midst of a ongoing being bullied situation, can one defeat a bully? Can you do it with words? Or has it got to be physicalized?
When I was bullied... And I was bullied, of course.
Of course. I would hope everybody in this room.
I think we all were. Yeah,
thank you. We're all nerdy enough.
I always responded with my waspish wit.
Uh-huh.
And I was always able to rank him down, as a New York City phrase, in the schoolyard. Mm-hmm. But then when I left school, he'd beat the hell out of me.
So that didn't work?
No, it didn't work.
All right. Uma?
Same. I try to talk them down.
Uh-huh.
And use, you know, intellect and wit and try and make them feel stupid. And that worked on some people. It didn't necessarily work on others. So as a kid growing up, sometimes you just put up with that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But like I said, you know, if you follow the films, you know, the key is that you grow up and you grow richer.
Okay.
And you grow better. And then the bully ends up washing your car for the rest of his life.
Right, in Back to the Future.
In Back to the Future.
But I mean, I went the Lord of the Flies way. You know? And so I was like, don't pick on me, pick on him. He's even smaller and stupider and uglier than me. And that didn't work either, because then that guy beat me up.
You let the side down, Cam.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So if, let's say, you're being caught in the midst of a ongoing bullying situation, I don't have an answer. I don't, and I the debates with Hillary Clinton will be very interesting if she has an answer.
I'm afraid for those things. I think for the longest time, whatever said and done, the circus aside of the American electoral system, when it came down to the final two, you often had quite a lot of substantial conversations in those debates. I don't know if you're going to get anything substantive out of this one. I think it's just going to be a woman bashing session. I think it's going to be him calling her a liar over and over again.
Mm. Yeah, I think I'm not expecting anything. In fact, I even think there's a strong possibility or a possibility that he'll find a way not to show up for those debates.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay. Carrying on with the Trump theme, topic number two, reality TV and American politics, Uma.
So I've been working on this theory in my head, and I guess we'll get to where Trump came from when Ray does his bit. But so for me, the presidential election as entertainment/edutainment, this seems like the natural culmination of where it's been going. So as we all know, the Nixon-Kennedy life debates was a big moment in television, right?
Yes.
And you know, you had the better looking man come across as being more successful,
whereas Nixon was very sweaty.
He was sweaty. He was clammy. He also wasn't media trained for television, right? So his performance wasn't as charismatic.
But apparently his arguments actually were better.
That's right. I guess the story goes that people who were listening to it on radio thought Nixon won, and people who watched it on TV thought JFK won.
Mm.
So you had that. And then you fast forward a little bit along, and the influence of cinema in popular culture kind of culminated in Reagan becoming president in many ways. And then now you fast forward that along some more, and this new generation that's grown up and indoctrinated on reality television has a character like Donald Trump. Now, I know there are very real reasons as to why the Republican base turned against the Republican candidates, right? I mean, there's lots of problems within the Republican Party which caused that base to feel neglected and therefore turn towards Trump. But I also think that Trump is a person, given his experience in the entertainment and media field, watching this election in particular, it's phenomenal. He knows how to steal media time. He knows how to play a scene, you know. Hillary Clinton has incredibly successful Democratic convention. Now, by all rights, what happens usually after these conventions, that news cycle is yours for at least a week.
Hmm.
What does Trump do? He immediately comes out and he makes a statement about how pro-gun rights people should know what to do about Hillary Clinton, kind of hinting that, you know, you should shoot Hillary Clinton. What happens? Hillary Clinton is on page 6 and 7 of all the major newspapers, and Trump is on the front page again.
Well, okay, well, Ray, you've seen a few elections in your time. Is this, no, is this a first?
I go back to George Washington.
Okay, all right. Well, actually, he wasn't actually elected,
I know,
by the way.
I know, but I was for him.
is this a first? Is he a
master manipulator?
Master manipulator in new media?
You know, I was going to bring up later, but I'll bring it up right away. I think the most prophetic movie I've seen on this, and the most important one, was Network.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Network was about the replacement of news on television with entertainment. Hmm. And, of course, Howard Beale, who in the end has a breakdown and is actually murdered on the air, speaking of the Hillary Clinton thing, is Peter Finch played that character, is really the one, you see the transition in the Network between the old kind of news that you used to get with Walter Cronkite and the new kind of news that you get on Fox, which is entertainment. And
which is designed to make your blood boil.
Yes, and of course
scream the TV.
The line everybody knows from that movie, even if they haven't seen it,
the movie.
Is, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Hmm. Well, what are Trump's people saying?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And what's more, he knows how to play these things really well. So there was one moment earlier on where he gets the endorsement of David Duke of the KKK. Hmm. Now, Trump plays that out so he dominates the cycle for at least 3 or 4 days before turning that endorsement down. He knows David Duke.
Oh, yeah.
He pretends like he doesn't. Then his campaign people come out and play that along for a little while before finally him going, oh, no, I don't like the KKK. I don't like David Duke. But for all of that time, he managed to steal the limelight and the thunder away from the, 15, 20 other Republican candidates.
Yes, but isn't he mistaking ratings for votes?
But that's what
but
it
aren't
is.
Are they not two different things?
I think we're living in a world where ratings can be mistaken for votes.
Yeah, and he obviously is for tweet, retweets, etc. But he needs to win a majority of votes.
No, he needs to win, which is even more crucial, a majority of the Electoral College.
Okay, but he still needs to win a lot of votes. Yeah. So it's not good enough for him to just to rate well with a certain demographic, with one demographic, which he does, white, uneducated males. He needs to work well with educated females, for instance, which he's not doing.
And I think that's why Ray's right, in the sense that, you know, at the end of the day, come November, I don't think he's going to win, because I don't think he's getting any women, African-American, Latin-American, any gay, any kind of minority vote, I don't think is going for Trump. And the minority is the majority these days in the States.
There was an article yesterday in the Washington Post where they did probably the most extensive, I think they had 70,000 voters.
Whoa.
Survey. And it was county by county by county. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just a general thing. And when you see that survey, what you see is that Trump can't win. Hmm. That, you know, he does have support, but the support is kind of diffused. What, 7 American cities have half the population? Hmm. There's no support for him.
Sorry, 7 American cities have half?
I think it's 7.
What does that mean? So have half
the
population?
In other words, if you add the population of, say, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, whatever, maybe 10, I forget.
It accounts for half the voting population.
Half the population of the United States.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Gosh, I didn't know that.
So, you know, you always see these electoral maps with the blue states on the coasts and the red states in the middle. But there's nobody living in the red states.
Right.
But come November, I think you can actually look at the structure of this election as a reality TV season.
Yeah.
Trump is the a-hole that everyone wants out on episode 1, but he stays all the way to episode 22.
Until he's fired.
Okay, well, just to wrap this one up, I mean, the conspiracy theories, one of the stories is that he's not even planning to win, and his idea is that, because he's brought in Roger Ailes, ex of Fox News.
Fox News.
And also the guy from Breitbart, which is just this horrible,
worst
website. So that's Michael Moore's theory, right? He says that Trump doesn't even plan to win.
And that he wants to create a rival TV network, rival to Fox News.
So basically, he wins no matter what, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he still gets his media empire at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. We love Trump here. just in case you didn't know, we do. We all love Trump.
We want to make BFM great again.
And thank you, Ray.
But just before we wrap, though, Ray, very quickly, I got to know. this is a one-of-a-kind moment, right? We've never seen anything like this in presidential politics, right?
I sincerely hope it's a one-of-a-kind moment. I really do. And I think, but, you know, Hitler was a one-of-a-kind moment.
You only need one.
You only need one.
Yes. It's a last-of-a-kind moment. Okay, so in a moment, though, we're going to really get to the grips with understanding where this Trump fella came from here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Uma Pagan, Abike Pagan, and Ray Buono. And now Ray, who has himself said that he's seen every presidential election since...
Washington.
Well, let's say John Adams.
Okay, all right. Ray, Donald Trump, where did he come from?
I only have a few minutes to say this. Mm-hmm. I'll try to be brief. I want to talk about four things, okay? Class, race, mm-hmm. culture... and Freud.
Oh, okay.
Whoa, okay.
That's little things. Okay. It won't take long.
No, I know. I mean, just again, as a brief outline, I think Trump is a product of the failure of neoliberal economics, and neoliberal economics is failing all over the world. The market system that has destroyed the middle class, it's concentrated wealth at the very high end. We all know this. And so you have a huge number of disaffected people, many of them white, but of course not all, who are looking at a future where there is no future for them. They don't have jobs. Their income has gone down in the last 30 years since Ronald Reagan. And they look at the political establishment, both Democrat and Republican, and they say, there's nothing in it for me. So they're angry. And what you've seen during this primary period especially is that some of the anger has been on the Bernie Sanders team, and a lot of it has been on the Donald Trump team.
So just to interject briefly, first of all, you like Bernie, didn't you?
Yeah.
You felt the burn, didn't
mm-hmm.
you?
Yeah.
And so the Bernie Sanders supporters, are they just the flip side of the same coin with Trump?
Well, again, I would go back in a way without being to Weimar Germany, mm-hmm. where you had the same kind of economic insecurity, and you had the rise of the fascists on the right, and you had the rise of the socialists on the left. I don't think it's that extreme in America, but I do think that's basically the center cannot hold, as you
okay.
said.
So that's economics, next
yeah.
class.
Okay, next is race.
Sorry, race.
Okay.
Sorry, what am I saying? Race.
And again, I mean, the Republican Party has been dog whistling ever since, Fido came out of the kennel. You know, we could go back to Barry Goldwater. We could go back to Ronald Reagan, who made his first speech at Philadelphia, Mississippi. And for a long time, I mean, basically, ever
which,
since...
Which is where I think the Civil War was declared or something.
No. Philadelphia, Mississippi, I'm sorry, I should have said that.
Yeah.
Was where Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner were murdered. Mm. And there's no reason to go to Philadelphia, Mississippi, except mm-hmm. to dog whistle from there, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. And, of course, with the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Southern Democrats became Republicans. And you have a tremendous insecurity in the United States, which goes back to the Constitution or even before then, a tremendous conflict about race. Add to that to the economic insecurity, mm. and you have Trump's campaigns against immigrants who mm-hmm. are taking away our jobs. You have the rise of the Tea Party, which has been openly racist.
Mm.
And of course, the catalyst for this was the election of Barack Obama.
Who happens to be...
Why is that man in the White House?
Yeah, and we want our country back.
And we want to make America great again. And, mm. you know, since I grew up when America was great, mm-hmm. I know what that means.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, race, slavery, all of that goes back. And there's a tremendous threat, you know, to white America that comes from darker skinned people. You can look.
They will become the underclass when they had grown up knowing that the black man, etc., would be the underclass.
Well, this goes again back to the very beginning, because there were not only were there slaves that came to America. You can read your Howard Zinn on this, but there were white slaves who came to America as well.
First. Yeah.
So you have three classes: the aristocracy, the white underclass, and then the slaves.
Mm.
And the white underclass has become Johnny Redneck, and the blacks are still the threat to white America. Yeah. So where were we?
That's number three. What's number three?
Race.
Culture.
Class.
Culture.
Sorry.
And by that I mean the media culture, which in a way you've talked about. So I can be, but American culture has coarsened. The media has become a circus rather than a legitimate organ of criticism and alternative reporting. And basically, I think Americans have become kind of lazy. They just want to watch television passively, and they just want to. So there isn't that kind of critical input into political thinking that there was perhaps back in the 60s and 70s.
Okay. And then finally?
Freud.
Here we go. This won't take long.
It won't take long at all.
Okay. What can I say? The white male, especially the white male who's my age, is not getting as strong as he used to be.
But not as virile.
Not as strong, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's gone a bit limp and flaccid, if you know what I mean. And especially at my age, that becomes something that you become aware of. And Trump is a walking erection. He's a walking, thrusting, red-tipped.
Orange, actually.
Orange tip. Well, same thing, you know. And he talks about making America great again. And he talks about the size of his hands, and he talks about little Marco.
And Jeb Bush, low energy.
And I would like to be great again myself, so I know what that means, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, all right.
But I think actually the idea that economic deprivation also is an attack on someone's virility.
Okay.
That when we are feeling economically impotent, we also, in a sense, feel sexually impotent.
And also the Mexicans are going to rape our women.
Yeah.
That too. Yeah. So, Ray, here's my question.
Yeah.
With Trump, he comes from that upper class, though. He's a billionaire, or so he claims. Now, with the vast majority of the voters who are frustrated and say, you know, just in poverty at the moment and are unhappy with their lives and their jobs, do they not see Trump as part of the problem? Or is it a part of that American dream that, hey, he's that aspirational quality I want to get to?
Yeah, there's always been that in the American middle class and poor, is that they will always. I mean, Donald Trump is every kind of middle class guy's dream of what it would be like to be wealthy. I've got my own yacht. I've got my own jet.
I've got buildings all across the
buildings,
country.
Buildings, big erections all over the country.
And also, he has no class. I mean, he's so crass.
Right.
His style is crass. Even though he calls it classy, everyone knows it's crass.
Yeah.
So it's unthreatening on that level.
So, I mean, and of course, women, do we have to go there, right? So you compare that with, say, the Kennedys, who also...
They're classy, though.
Or Roosevelt, who were also... But they came from a different kind of aristocracy.
Yeah.
Trump is from Queens, okay? His father was a real estate developer. And, of course, Trump was rich when he started. In fact, somebody said that if he'd put it into the bank, he would have made more money. But I don't know if that's true. But, I mean, it's that kind of flashy wealth, which I think people identify with not – I mean, you wouldn't want to be like, say – Franklin D. Roosevelt, and have Eleanor.
you know. Good looking lady.
No, you want Trump and Melania.
You want, you know.
Yeah. But I don't know. I can't get past the fact that he is a rich man whose businesses are just debt laden. He's a moron. Sorry, getting a bit technical there. I'm sorry. I still can't understand why anybody would vote for him.
You know, the greatest American philosopher was not Henry David Thoreau. It was P.T. Barnum.
the great entertainer, the great showman.
No, and as P.T. Barnum said, immortally, there's a sucker born every minute. And if you look at a culture like America's, you can see that not just in politics, but all over the place, right? You know, if you look at H.L. Mencken said, no one ever went broke, underestimating the judgment of the American public.
Yeah.
Trump is yet another affirmation of that.
Okay.
I don't know how far it's true. I still have this feeling. So I was in Chicago a couple of months ago, and there was this theory that was being propagated by taxi drivers, of course, because, you know, they have the best conspiracy theories. And they were under the impression that Trump didn't think he'd get this far and was never planning on getting this far. But now that he's gotten this far, he himself is just like, oh, crap, what do we do?
Might as well make a TV show.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so thank you, Ray. You have welcome. Explained...
man. Yeah.
Yeah?
Not just Trump, but man in general.
Man.
in under 10 minutes. I think that's quite a feat. Okay, so now we're going to leave... Or are we going? Are we ever going to leave Donald Trump behind? Oh my God! I hope we do. to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest, and we've decided to recommend a political movie, especially about American politics in particular. And so I'm going to go first. Mine is The Manchurian Candidate. Not the...
The original.
Yeah, the original, not the remake, which was just...
Which was Denzel Washington.
Just plain silly. The first one, back in, 1960, I think, had Frank Sinatra, Lawrence Harvey, and it was about a group of soldiers who'd been captured in the Korean War and had returned home. And upon returning home, they all felt a bit weird, and it was discovered that one of them was, I guess what you'd call, what we now call a Manchurian candidate, in that he had been brainwashed by the North Koreans in order to enter U.S. politics, take over, become the president, and then therefore become an insider for the communists. It's a really great film. It's very chilling, sinister. It also has the first ever Hollywood movie kung fu scene. Did you know that?
Fantastic. I did not know that.
No, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, yeah. Kung fu fight between Frank Sinatra and some North Korean agent. And it's very sinister. It's a good film. I like it. Do you guys like it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Huge fan of the Manchurian Candidate. Yeah.
And I was about to flash the Queen of Clubs at you, but I decided not to.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of Manchurian Candidate, so Donald Trump is, to my mind, a Manchurian Candidate in that he is already a Russian agent. He just doesn't even know it.
Oh, you say Russian agent. Yeah. No, he's an agent of the Clintons to bring down the Republican Party.
Okay. So, Uma, you're next. What's yours?
Right. So, this is a large scope of films to pick from, but I've gone with something a little more lighthearted. I'm going with a movie called Dave, which came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, I think. Kevin Klein, Sigourney Weaver. It's kind of branded as a comedy because it's kind of funny, but for me, I think the messaging in that movie is very important. The story kind of rotates around an American president who has a stroke in flagrante delicto while he's having sex with a
mistress,
with his secretary, right?
Yeah.
And they need to hide this from the American public, and they happen to find a guy who looks exactly like him. So they kind of pay him to be an impersonator and come on board and pretend to be the president. Of course, one thing leads to another, and this guy's saying, wait, if I look like the president, I can be the president and do some good. And he starts undermining all of the corrupt practices that this White House seems to be perpetrating. And that's essentially the story. There's a bit of a romantic comedy angle with Sigourney Weaver, who plays the first lady. But for me, I mean, the essential story is that every man can be the president, no matter who you are, where you come from, right? Once you're in that role, you can do the job. And that's the optimistic message of this film.
But yeah, I've been thinking about Dave quite a bit in the last few months with the rise of Trump, and I think that Trump is Dave.
Dave is nice. He's sweethearted, Cam.
But he wants to make America great again. He wants to change things.
No, because Dave, as you said, is a nice guy, number one, and because Trump is... he has none of the manner. We're always talking about how we have to make him look presidential.
That's true.
And Dave could never be presidential.
Dave could never be.
I mean, Trump. Dave could never be unpresidential.
Yes, right. So Dave was...
Dave is trying to be presidential.
So Trump?
Trump is just trying to be Trump.
So Dave,
it's a very good film. If you've never seen it, it's a lot of fun and very entertaining and very sweet, right?
Isn't it by, what's his name, Ghostbusters?
Ivan Reitman.
It's Ivan Reitman.
It's an Ivan Reitman
film. You're always in safe hands with an Ivan Reitman movie, aren't you?
You are.
Yeah. Ray.
Oh, God. There's so many that I could choose from.
Let's narrow it down.
What I've tried to do, what I've finally in the last 10 seconds decided is that I want to recommend Frank Capra.
Oh, cheating, but fantastic.
I want to recommend the great poet of American corn. They even call it Capricorn. And I'm going to go with two movies, one of which I think is the greatest political movie ever made in America, and that's Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, starring Jimmy Stewart, about a man who is appointed to the Senate by the governor because another senator dies, uncovers political corruption, and is almost destroyed. But, of course, this being Frank Capra, he's not destroyed.
This is like 1940?
1941. 41. And it was the only movie ever made in the actual U.S. Senate chamber.
Oh, that's right.
And after that, the Senate would never allow another movie to be made there. Yeah.
He was literally plucked out of being the leader of a scout troop.
Yes, it's wonderful.
It's a great film.
It pays homage to all the really great American ideas about equality and justice and all of that as well.
And that final scene when he's filibustering, he's making this impassioned speech in the Senate before he collapses, right? Mm-hmm. is just, you can just watch that scene over and over again.
Absolutely. But then after that, Claude Rains plays the kind of like the evil senator. Yeah.
He
rushes out of the chamber and he grabs a gun. He tries to shoot himself. Yes. And he says, "The boy is right. I'm a terrible person. I must kill myself." It's like, what?
You just gave it away.
That's what they did in the 40s, Cam.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they did
okay,
in the 40s.
But again, isn't Trump Mr. Smith?
No.
Why do you
just because he happens to be a nice guy? He's the outsider. That's the beauty. When you're watching Mr. Smith, he's like, oh, he's every man. He's an outsider. He's not like the political class.
Wait. Frank Capra, who was an Italian immigrant, okay, was very aware in the 1940s of the rise of fascism. Mm-hmm. Okay? And this movie and the other one I was going to mention, which is Meet John Doe, were exactly about the rise of fascism. And there are terrible scenes in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington as well, where the rich, I forget his name, Norton, is trying to destroy Smith's campaign. And that is much more about Trump.
Okay.
Meet John Doe, can I use that? Barbara Stanwyck and Gary Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Stanwyck plays a reporter who's just been fired from her newspaper. And she comes up with an idea, which is that she writes a fake letter to the paper saying that, and signs it John Doe, saying that I'm fed up with America, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, and I'm going to jump off this building on New Year's Eve. But then she has to find someone to be John Doe.
Hmm.
And so she interviews all these bums. This was the Depression, after all. And finally comes up with Gary Cooper, who is a baseball player with a bad arm named John Doe. And he becomes the face of this letter. This becomes a popular movement, a populist movement in the United States.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah.
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 Where people form John Doe societies, clubs, to be nice to each other and to help each other out.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. It's different for us. Different.
But these societies are manipulated by the evil capitalists who are using these people to vote and get this Donald Trump kind of figure into office. And it is a brilliant movie. I love it. Until the last 5 minutes.
All right. We won't.
And I won't talk about them.
Hey, by the way, is that where the term John Doe came in order for it to denote anonymous people?
No. Actually,
The movie Capri borrowed it.
Borrowed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So you know who is Mr. Smith? You know who is all of this? It's not Trump. It's Obama. The guy who came in trying to change the system and then got beaten down by the system.
I would say it's Bernie.
Bernie. Yeah, exactly. And Bernie.
Okay. By the way, Gary Cooper, that's why after him, people are called Gary. Before him, nobody was called Gary. He was named after Gary, Indiana, in the town that he came from. And it was not a name that existed before him.
See, on a bit of culture, you learn things every day.
Absolutely.
I'm flabbergasted.
Yes. Thank you very much. So that's the great Frank Capra. Check out any of his films. They're all worth, apart from his later ones, all worth watching. So, well, it only remains for me now to thank special honored guest Ray Buono. Thank you for coming. Uma Pagan, Amike Pagan.
Always a pleasure.
Myself, Cam Ruslan. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please do so on our Facebook group page thing. Sadly, the numbers are down by 33%. Did you know that, producer Darrell? We only had
I think the economy is down by 33% too. It's just reflective.
Okay, so please get in there. Twitter, we're available on Twitter. Ray, are you a Twitter person?
I'm not a Twitter person. I need more than 140 characters.
Right.
Facebook.
You're very Facebook. Ray is very Facebook. Yeah, you can feel the burn on Ray's Facebook page. And so please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on the Super Trump-tastic A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.